Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to 12. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how you doing?
I'm well indeed this morning. You know, I was over a friend's house, and he invited me over for a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't really a barbecue. It was a cookout.
Oh, see, just this past weekend, a friend of mine had a barbecue, and he did a pig roast. And it was more than a cookout.
Yeah.
It was a true...
We use the word barbecue kind of loosely around here, but we're coming in the Northeast to know more about barbecue, which is a long, slow cooking process.
Mm-hmm.
That 8, 12, 14, 20 hours over a fire, over a coal fire usually, or wood fire. And you're seeing more and more barbecue joints in New York. You've got Danny Meyer's big
mm-hmm.
place, Blue Smoke. The New York, the Big Apple Barbecue Festival is hosted outside of Blue Smoke. You've got Daisy Mays, which is a big place in New York. So, you can get some good barbecue around the Northeast now.
Yeah, you know, way back when I was in college, every year we would have a pig roast.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where the tradition started. And we go to the meat market in New York City, pick out a pig.
Mm-hmm.
And roast a pig, and one of the guys would dig a hole in the ground
mm-hmm.
and fill it with charcoal and roast a pig. He'd start at 5 a.m. roasting the pig,
mm-hmm.
and we'd figure it'd be done 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. It'd be done when we were ready to eat. Never. It was never done.
I recall those parties.
Until about 2 a.m. And 2 a.m. is a bad time for the pig to be done.
Yeah.
Because it was a little bit of a free-for-all. But then we started using this, it's like a little box, and actually you and I have used this together. It's called a Caja China.
You can find it online. If you will link to our website, Caja China, C-A-J-A-C-H-I-N-A, translate to Spanish device. It was invented either in Florida or Cuba, and it's called Caja China means a Chinese box.
Mm. And pretty much what it does is it flattens your pig out and evenly heats it. And if you don't have too big a pig, you can roast your pig in a lot less time. Unless it's raining.
Mm, it rained the other day, didn't it, at your barbecue? The way the Caja China works is you put the coals over the pig. So the pig
mm-hmm.
goes in the box. It's got a metal grate on top. The coals go on top. It makes a beautifully well-roasted pig. Unless, of course, it rains.
Unless it rains. Everything goes a lot slower. And there we were again, 2 a.m.
Well, I got to tell you, if you want to short-circuit the process, there was a great article in the Times by Peter Meehan. There's Daisy Mays is a great barbecue place in Manhattan. We've been there a number of times. We actually interviewed the owner of Daisy Mays on this program once. But what they're doing now at Daisy Mays, now there are a lot of different kinds of barbecue. You can barbecue different parts of the animal, but whole hog barbecue, like you've heard that expression, going for the whole hog.
Mm-hmm.
Whole hog barbecue is a very specialized kind of barbecue, and you actually roast the entire pig, and then when you serve it, you scrape out different parts of the pig, and it's amazing, and it's the best barbecue you can possibly have.
And what some of these people who make whole hog will do is they'll actually pick different parts of the pig for you to eat together and make almost we'll call it like a homemade
sloppy pig,
like sloppy pig, I guess, or
yeah.
or loose sausage almost.
Okay, here's what you want to check out though. At Daisy Mays, you can get a barbecued half pig for $200. He's got this whole menu of massive cuts of meat meant for large groups that Adam Perry Lang, who's the owner of Daisy Mays.
I'm a large group.
And the pitmaster, yeah. Too much for you, pal, even for you. Other items that you can get on the new menu, you can get a whole 8-rib rack of American lamb for $95, a bone-in pork butt for $120.
Okay, forget it. I am going
for the whole
with
hog.
A bunch of people. We're getting the whole pig. Who's in?
Okay.
I think you can get a whole or a half pig, but the whole 30-pound or more suckling pig is $400.
In.
Okay. Must be ordered 2 days in advance.
No problem.
Except the lamb, which can be ordered by 5 p.m. the day you want to eat it, because, well, the lambs are smaller and take less time to cook. They say that's enough for, what did he say, 15 people?
He said the whole hog is 15, and the half you have to have at least 7.
Yeah, and a whole pork shoulder will feed 6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whole pig, 12. Rack of lamb, 2.
Okay.
Okay, so check this out. You order the stuff 2 days in advance. You go there, and they present you with the whole hog, right? He then paints the cutting board that the hog comes on with sweet and sour barbecue sauce based on chimayo chili, and then he encourages you to, like, take the meat out of the pig and drag it along the cutting board.
I'm actually salivating.
Yeah. Do not bring your vegetarian friends, okay? What's interesting is if you ever wonder where, like, the different cuts of meat in a pig come from, you'll know.
You'll know. That's it. Eating a whole animal like that, eating something where you see it, the whole animal, I think it's very educational. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, farm to table and how exactly that works. Well, any time you start with a whole animal and you present that whole animal and you eat the whole animal, I think there is a greater deal of respect that comes with that.
I agree. It's about real food. Chicken does not come from a package in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. It comes from an animal.
There's no such thing as a boneless breast that hopping around the farm.
Sliming around the farm, I guess. The restaurant
Although
says
there may be one day.
You can get a half pig, which is about 15-pound half pig, or a whole pork shoulder feeds 6, the whole pig feeds 12, and the rack of lamb feeds 2. Have it presented to you, and they present you with what Peter Meehan says in the Times. He says, unceremoniously presented with a box of latex gloves, and you're encouraged to triple up to insulate your fingers from the heat of the meat, and then the pig picking begins.
I'll tell you, that's something that people, I think, maybe don't realize when you do a pig roast. Your pig's been roasting for 12, 15, 18, 20 hours, 24 hours sometimes. Okay? You know what the inside of that pig is?
Delicious
and hot. Okay, it's really, really hot. And so, seeing a bunch of and I'll use this term, drunken fraternity guys ripping away at a pig, going, "Ow, ow, that's hot."
You know what you're going to see in a couple of weeks?
Yeah,
a couple of drunken 40-year-old men. At Daisy Mae's Barbecue. Daisy Mae's Barbecue is on 11th Avenue at 46th Street in Midtown. They are not an advertiser on this show. But they're about to provide us with a lovely, lovely meal. We'll link that up on our website.
Very much looking forward to that.
Because you can't get a whole, you can't go to a restaurant. I'd like a pig, please.
Yeah,
bring me an entire pig. So we're going to get 6 or 10 of our friends together and go
a pig roast.
Go hog picking.
Can't wait. If you've ever been out to dinner with me and you'd like to go, please call.
Yeah. Or if you haven't and you'd like to go, you buy the wine. No, we'll bring the wine. I don't want to do that. So that's in New York. There are also a bunch of other great barbecue places in New York, which you can find on our website. We did a show
You mentioned Danny Meyer's place, Blue Smoke, which we've been to together, which I like a lot.
We did a show a while back, not this year, but
Virgil's
last year.
Barbecue is another place we've been to together.
Not this year, but last year we covered the Big Apple Barbecue, where we interviewed some of the best pit masters in the country. It was a two-part show. You can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. If you don't know about barbecue, now's time to learn, especially if you're around in the Northeast. There's more good barbecue than you can shake a stick at. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jay Weinstein, who's written a book called The Ethical Gourmet, which is a very interesting book about food, how it's produced, how it comes to you. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1115. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Jay Weinstein writes books. He's cooked at Le Bernardin. His articles have appeared in the New York Times and Travel and Leisure. He's the editor of the CIA, that's the Culinary Institute of America, newsletter, Kitchen and Cook. And he joins us today to speak about his new book, The Ethical Gourmet.
Jay, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. How are you? Thanks a lot for having me.
Oh, it's super. I love your book, and it actually raises a lot of issues. I think a lot of people are sort of confused by the many different constraints besides just taste, where people are trying to eat ethically. Well, can you explain why you wrote the book and what your mission was in writing this thing?
Yeah, you know, people are often searching for what can they do. There are so many issues that are associated with food, whether it's the humane treatment of animals. Sometimes people really become aware of what the life of livestock is, and don't don't want to participate in the cruelest of the practices. People are concerned about the environment and the earth and say, I know that there's a lot of pollution out there, and I know that there's a lot of environmental degradation from human activity, but what can I do? Am I going to go up to the woods and live in a shack like Grizzly Adams? I know that we can do things about those problems, and this book is my effort to clarify what an individual can do. The small steps, sometimes large steps, whatever your comfort level is, to make a difference.
You know, Jay, I think the hardest thing for most people is knowing, there's so much mixed information about there about what's good, what's right, how things are produced, the word natural, word organic.
I go to buy my organic fish and then I bring it home and someone says, but that was fish farm. You ruined the environment. I'm like, I thought I was doing the right thing. Next thing you know, you're going to McDonald's.
I was saving the wild fish.
Right, exactly. But then you find out that it pollutes. I mean, can you really, do you think that people can, by reading your book, really get a handle on how to behave responsibly how to achieve their goals, whatever their personal goals with spending their food dollars are? Or is it just too complicated to really even get a handle on?
I think that through reading this book, people will be able to make a difference. I don't claim that if everybody in the world had this book that all pollution from food would cease and that all workers in the food chain of production would be treated fairly. But I do believe that if somebody takes to heart some of the simple suggestions that I make in the book, that they will be able to make a difference in one cocoa picker's life, in one farm where animals are treated humanely, will be able to stay in business. So, yeah, I do think that it's very enriching to feel like there are things that you can do. It's very empowering. And that is what this book is about. The Ethical Gourmet is about being able to make a difference of whatever size. People ask me often, what is something that I can do? What is, if I was only going to do one single thing, to be ethical and be an ethical gourmet, what would it be? And I pick one and I say, get organic dairy products from now on. Just switch brands to organic dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do anything else in the world, from my whole book of suggestions, just get organic eggs or organic milk instead of the conventional, because the organic dairy cattle, I'm sorry, the organic dairy cows are not treated in a way that you would want them treated. If you were there and you saw the factory milk production operations, you would say, oh, I don't want to play a part in this.
Yeah, because you're because you'd say, and I don't want to eat anything that came out of this environment.
Yeah, if we were closer to our food, we would understand that that's not the way a farm was ever meant to be run in anybody's imagination.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, up until these factory systems were developed, within most of our lifetimes, there really wasn't such a humane issue with, say, hens for laying eggs. Hens were treated more or less like, okay, well, you're giving me something, so here's your food, here's your nest, make your eggs.
Right.
But now, in order to ramp up production, make sure that each hen produces the maximum number of eggs per hour, per minute, they have put them under all kinds of scientific conditions with flashing lights, keeping them in darkness for huge amounts of time, feeding them diets that are unnatural and not really things that we would want to talk about in mixed company, and all in an effort to make that hen generate another 6 eggs a day another 6 eggs a week whatever.
It changed the idea of food production is, I mean, I think what people like you and we are talking about all the time is realizing that there's a balance in nature and that animals are animals. And while, I'm not a vegetarian and I feel that it's okay to raise animals for food and to kill animals for food, but an animal is not a meat machine.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a thing as cruelty to animals.
And you do two things when you do that. And this is the point that Francis and I argue, and I don't care from which side you come, frankly, but you do two things when you put these animals into these conditions. A, we believe that you treat them in a way that you shouldn't be treating animals. But B, you treat them in a way that you shouldn't be treating your food.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're going to have to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Jay Weinstein. His wonderful book is called The Ethical Gourmet. And if you listen to our shows, you realize there's a lot of complicated issues out there. And here's one book where you can sort of get an overview of what's going on in the world and what you can do to find, and it's our position, that this is not only food that's ethical, but it's also a way to find food that's really good, nutritious, and tasty. So we'll be back in just a moment talking more with Jay Weinstein about The Ethical Gourmet. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Jay Weinstein. His book is The Ethical Gourmet, and we're talking with him about this wonderful book, which is really a great reference as well as a great read-through. Now, Jay, we often say on this show that it's been our experience that if you were to take two guys who know a lot about food, and you take one guy out and you say, listen, go find me the best-tasting chicken, tomato, whatever it is, and you send another guy out and you say, hey, listen, you go find me the most ethically produced, local farmer produced, no antibiotics, no hormones, whatever, those two guys are going to wind up at the same farm with the same tomato. Is ethically produced food usually better tasting?
The answer is most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make claims in my book that I don't really think are always provable. And there are a lot of times when you can put an organic carrot in front of me and a conventional carrot in front of me, and I'll chomp into them and I'll say, they both taste very delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I can't guarantee you that in a blind tasting, I would really be able to taste the difference between organic milk and conventional milk.
You know,
I'm going to tell you, Jay, just because in my household we drink a lot of organic milk, and we used to not.
Mm-hmm.
And organic milk is much richer tasting than non-organic milk.
I'll also throw out there that I think while it's certainly true that there's a lot of ethically produced food that's good, it's nothing spectacular. When you find the spectacular chicken or when you find the spectacular piece
right.
of lamb. That will not be a factory chicken. That will not
that
be
a
factory
good point.
Tomato.
And that, the answer most of the time, it really counts mostly in things that have a higher level of production, like meat.
Mm-hmm.
Meat and eggs tend to, I definitely think there's a difference in eggs.
Yeah.
I was saying, I can't really tell the difference with things that always come
yeah,
right out of
carrots not so much. I don't disagree with you.
But there is definitely a difference between an organic chicken and a conventional chicken, and especially when you're talking about the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about the difference between a free-range organic chicken, which is really the gold standard, and a factory farm produced chicken, a Tyson or a Purdue or one of the sort of mainstream supermarket chickens, there's no comparison whatsoever. There is such a huge difference in terms of the texture, in terms of juiciness, et cetera.
We're gonna take a quick break. Come back after the news and listen to us more. We're gonna be talking about ethical means of production, how to get some of the best food, and some recipes that you'll find in Jay Weinstein's book, The Ethical Gourmet. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us Monday through Friday from 11 to 12. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
In addition to his many cookbooks, Jay Weinstein has cooked at Le Bernardin. His articles have appeared in the New York Times and Travel and Leisure. He's the editor of the CIA newsletter Kitchen and Cook, and he joins us today to speak about his book, The Ethical Gourmet. So, Jay, we were talking about ethical means of production. If you want the best quality meat, you know, one of the reasons this has come to the forefront is when you look at the best chefs or the best restaurants, they're not buying Purdue chickens and putting it on their menu as much because
– yeah.
Huh?
I'm just saying they're going out to the small farms. They're going out to Steve Iacone out in Long Island. They're going up to going up to the Catskills for the small farmers there.
And they're going there because of the taste as well as any because that's what they need to do.
To Greggstown here in New Jersey, there's a great farm.
Now, I think that there's an interesting quandary that comes up that is really the ethical question of all this great food, and then the greatest criticism that's foisted against people saying, oh sure, you latte liberals in the Northeast with your fancy cars can easily afford, you know, an organic free-ranging chicken and a grass-fed lamb. But what is a middle-class, working-class person who's like, you know, I got to watch my dollars.
My free-range chicken cost me $1.89 a pound. My regular chicken cost me 69 cents a pound.
And so how does that translate? And one of my answers is I think I would always rather eat less meat and protein and center of the plate stuff, but better. And I think that, you know, people are drinking less but better. How do you address that issue, the financial issue of, you know, I think the paradigm was once expressed, and let's see if I get this right. It was the paradigm currently
50-50 is what I'm giving it.
The paradigm currently being that farmers struggling to stay on the family farm produce food for the very rich that gives them just enough money to stay poor but stay on the farm, while poor people eat mass-produced food. Is that a paradigm that you have want to address?
You know, Francis, that I'm glad you brought it up because there's no bigger red herring than the silliness that Americans, the wealthiest nation on earth, cannot afford to spend a few cents more, even a few dollars more a week for ethical food that's raised in a way that we are not ashamed of.
I agree. And also, everybody out there, including me, I'm fat. Okay, I should eat a little bit less of the red meat and eat the better red meat.
You have a section in your book, Jay, called The Hidden Costs of Cheap Food. Let's talk a little bit about those hidden costs.
Okay, well, for one thing, although we're not quite as bad at it as the Europeans are, we still heavily, heavily subsidize production of food that
of the wrong foods.
Yeah, I mean, we're subsidizing huge, huge amounts of production on a scale that the Earth has never seen before. For example, corn, which is raised for both human consumption and for livestock feed, is an enormous subsidized crop. And what that's doing is it's driving down the price of things like beef. And we get this sort of, and chicken, and we get this artificial sense of that meat is something that by right, we have the right to get meat at, $1.79 for ribeyes or, you know, for
But we're feeding, our cattle subsidized grain and subsidized corn, and so that you already paid for through your taxes.
It would be as if the ice cream man came and at the beginning of the season you gave him $100, and you said, "Here's $100. So in exchange for his $100, I want you to keep the price at $1 a cone."
Right, right. You know, it's interesting that I think a lot of people out there have the misconception that the lion's share of farm subsidies go to keep family farmers on the farm, when that is exactly the opposite of what's going on out there. What happens is the lion's share of the agriculture subsidies
go to the biggest mega farms
because they have the lobbyists.
It's just like the fact that the people who reap the biggest rewards from tax cuts are people who have enormous, enormous incomes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The people who are running these mega farms, they get all the breaks. And then the small farmers, if they see, a slight, maybe they'll get $10 back at the end of the year. It's not worth it to them to have a subsidy program like that.
Well, I'm Mr. Alternative Fuel Source, but ethanol would not be as cheap as ethanol is if we weren't subsidizing all the corn.
Right.
Right. And the fuel is an important... I'm glad you brought up fuel, Mark, because fuel is something that even with the $3.50 a gallon fuel that we're paying now, we're still paying less than most places around the world.
And less than they were paying 25 years ago.
Exactly. And we got so used to the idea that food could be shipped and trucked and produced with such cheap fuel, people don't realize where chemical pesticides and chemical fertilizers come from. They are petroleum products.
Yeah.
We get oil very inexpensively, and we are using an enormous amount. The amount of fuel used, the amount of oil used to make chemical fertilizers, nitrogen fertilizers, is unfathomable. People knew that the scale on which petroleum is used to make chemical fertilizers, they wouldn't even realize that their food, that their carrots are a petroleum product.
And that's one of the things that when you talk about organic food, you take that out of the mix. You take a lot of the petroleum out of the mix.
Exactly. And if we're talking about reducing our dependence on Middle East oil and on foreign sources as an ethical issue, which I think it is, that's one. You asked about the cheap cost of food, about the true cost of food. That's one of the points I raise in the book, is that people don't even think about, but because they wouldn't know. Why would they know that petroleum is an important ingredient in raising lettuce,
mm-hmm.
an important ingredient in raising conventional corn?
I think that's a great word that you use, ingredient.
Well, I want to go back to one issue that I really want to touch on. We talk to a lot of small farmers all the time, and many of these small farmers would rather that there be no agricultural subsidies to America,
mm-hmm.
within America, because they don't. Not only don't they get the benefit of it, the huge farmers get a huge benefit from it, and these little farmers, more pressure is put on the small farmers, mm-hmm. because the huge agribusiness concerns.
Right, how can they compete?
Right.
If with a subsidized farm and the scale of the scale of production from a large company, Archer Daniels Midland can produce sweet corn for 2 cents a bushel, and the local farmer can't produce it for less than 30 cents a bushel, and there's no way that he can compete on the market. People are going to go to the store, they're going to say, first of all, he might not even see his products.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They might even not even, I mean, most of the time people won't even see local products because they're relegated to farm stands now.
Well, we're lucky because now we do have an avenue, and it's through local foods and organic foods
co-op.
And CSAs, there is an avenue.
Yeah, and actually, if you're listening from inside Jersey, there is a program run. It's actually one of the few government programs that I really like, run from the state of New Jersey called Jersey Fresh. And mm-hmm. if you're out in the markets in Jersey and you see the Jersey Fresh banner, that means that a lot of supermarkets around here are responding to consumer demand and providing you with local produce. So if you see that Jersey Fresh sign, that means that the produce does come from a local farm in Jersey. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Jay Weinstein about his book, The Ethical Gourmet. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Jay Weinstein. His book is called The Ethical Gourmet, and we're talking about ethics in eating. Jay, a lot of people now are starting to switch over. In my neighborhood in Jersey City, we've just gotten in the last couple of months, Fresh Direct. Well, now I can go online and I can pick out what I want to have delivered, and they'll deliver it to my house the next day. What about online buying of supermarket groceries, things like that, meats, things like that? Where does that, is that ethical? Does that have ethical implications?
Yeah, well, let me address that in two ways. First one is, just like any other shopping, you know, it's important what you choose. You know, I don't know whether everybody driving their own car to the supermarket is less fuel efficient or more fuel efficient than the Fresh Direct truck dieseling around town to everybody's homes. I haven't done the research on that. I can't say whether from an ethical standpoint you're doing more environmental damage by having a delivery truck bring your food to your house. Certainly here in the city, you know, I'm calling from New York, and most people shop on foot, and so having a Fresh Direct delivery truck idling out front is probably a bit of a environmental no-no. But, you know, that's something that the bridge I haven't crossed. But I wanted to go back to something that you were talking about just before the break.
Okay.
Which was, you know, that you are blessed with local farms, with farm stands, with CSAs, with community food co-ops. And I think that listeners who are interested in finding those places, and there may be one, like, a town away from you. There may be one, mm-hmm. you know, a 10-minute drive from your front door, even closer perhaps than the supermarket.
Here in Central Jersey, we have Cook College CSA that, mm-hmm. that does a CSA, local CSA for us, right in New Brunswick.
And one of the resources in this book, everybody should pick up a pencil right now and write down localharvest.org.
Oh, yeah, we feature them on we've had them on the show before. They're amazing.
And they have a website that's got a clickable map. You can find any, you just point to a place in the United States of America, and it will tell you where the farm stands are, where the farmers markets are, where the CSAs are.
CSA, again, for people who are just tuning in, community supported agriculture. That's where you buy a little share of the farm, and then you get a box of produce every week.
That's right. The farmer will harvest and split up the harvest among the members, and they get direct from the farm food. And it's a great way, especially if you have a family, it's a great way to get the absolute super freshest of foods. I mean, there's no middleman. It goes right to your door or right into your refrigerator from the fields.
Yeah. One of the things that people may not realize about buying locally, and one of the reasons that buying locally will always get you better produce, is if you're buying a tomato from Guatemala, that tomato, forget the ethics for a moment, that tomato had to be picked before it was ripe. Because if you picked a ripe tomato in Guatemala and it took a week to ship it to me, it would be rotten by the time we got it.
Yeah.
If you're buying a tomato from a local farmer, he picked it when it was ripe because if you're buying it in a store, he picked it a couple of days before it was ripe, optimally ripe. And if you're buying it at a farm stand, he probably picked it exactly at the right moment to get you the best tomato. And tomatoes that ripen on the vine are better than tomatoes that ripen in a brown bag or ripen
or
worse of all
with gas.
Absolutely, Francis. I mean, in the summertime, when local stuff, I mean, the idea of getting a tomato from outside of Jersey when Jersey tomatoes are in season, I think there couldn't be anything more culinarily absurd than that. But I think that what flummoxes a lot of people is, what do I do during the rest of the year? What do I do in October? What do I do in February when, you know, I'm not going to make a caprese salad, but I want to get a... You know, I want to make a little relish or a little salsa or something, and I need a tomato. I mean, I'm not going to stop eating. I'm not going to go back to ancient times and stop eating tomatoes except for when they're in season within my, you know, walking distance from my door.
Right.
And you know, I understand that, and I feel the same way.
But when it's available locally, you're crazy not to drink.
When it's available locally, get local. And when it's not available locally, know which one to buy. That's going to be doing. It's going to be the best tomato, and it's going to be doing the best thing from the earth.
Now,
I just want to add just one tiny little thing to that. Also, don't be afraid when it's cherry season to put some cherries up for the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, our grandparents did that for their entire lives during cherry season.
Even better when they're put up.
Exactly, you put the cherries up during strawberry season. You put strawberries up during tomato season. You put tomatoes up.
Peaches in the middle of fall are so good. Yeah. And if you didn't put them up when they were in the height of season, you missed the opportunity.
You know, it's funny. At our one restaurant, Catherine Lombardi, what we've decided to do is, and we didn't make it all the way through the year. We only put up 2,000 pounds of tomatoes last year, but we buy tomatoes locally when they're at the height of their season. We pick our own, and we borrow a huge kitchen from a country club who's friends of ours, and we go and we make thousands of pounds of sauce so that at Catherine Lombardi, we have local tomatoes.
Right.
Last year it was for 9 months. This year, hopefully, it'll be for 12 months. But you cannot imitate that sauce. It's just...
And I'll tell you, this is not that hard. This is shot on my own restaurant, so here you go. Okay, the tomato sauce that we were making last year in December, January, February, when we were still using those put-up tomatoes, was simply better than the tomato sauce that we're using right now. Now, we're only a couple of weeks away from getting back into tomatoes, but I will tell you that there is a discernible difference. Every single person in my organization knows that tomato sauce just simply is not as good as it was a few months ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think you're going to get an argument. I mean, your listeners, if they're listening to your show, then they know food, and they, I'm sure, know that feeling of picking up that tomato and smelling it when the local tomatoes come into the market. You walk into the produce section, and you can smell that fresh flavor. You can feel the texture on them.
Hey,
it's
you know
completely
what?
Different experience.
Jay, we have to take a short break. We'll come back again in just a moment. Our guest is Jay Weinstein. His book is The Ethical Gourmet. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Jay Weinstein. His book is called The Ethical Gourmet. You can find out more about The Ethical Gourmet and maybe pick up a copy, even if you go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Jay, thanks for writing the book, and thanks for coming on the show. It's been great to have you.
Thanks for having me, and, you know, all the suggestions that we talked about, all the subjects, they're solutions. Just pick them up. They're right in the book, and make a difference in your own life and in the life of the world.
Superman. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jay.
Bye-bye.
The book is a fun read. It's not like it's not a preachy tome. It's a great book.
You know,
it's really enjoyable to read.
We were talking earlier about how, you know, we put up strawberries, we put up tomatoes. We, you know, everybody's grandmother, if you went down into their cellar, you know, in the 40s and 50s, had those things in their
cellar. And it's not that hard to do. You could pick up a book, and it's a great family thing to do. I mean, I know people are pressed for time, and if you're pressed for time, it takes some time.
It does take some time.
But if you have an afternoon to put up stuff, it's a great family way to put up stuff that you can eat all year long.
You know, but we've lost at the same time some of that being excited when strawberry season comes in. I mean, I remember in my family, mid-July, we would go, my aunt has a house near the beach on Long Island, and I will never forget the memories of going in mid-July to my aunt's house, my grandmother standing in the kitchen, and I knew what it meant if my grandmother was standing in the kitchen in mid-July. She was frying zucchini flowers.
Right, right, right.
Okay, making the fried zucchini flowers. You know, I could tell, I could smell it from the driveway when grandma was frying the zucchini flowers. And, I love that. And I'll tell you, I really like doing the restaurant for my grandmother because I get a lot of those same sensations. Brings back a lot of memories. You know, mid-July, the restaurant's going to do fried zucchini flowers. The restaurant's going to do all those things. And for me, it's been really fun to do that.
And here's a summer tip for you guys for when tomatoes come in the summertime. Do not refrigerate your tomatoes. And I'm surprised at how many good cooks don't know this.
Mm-hmm.
When you refrigerate a tomato, it loses a lot of its flavor and it never comes back.
Right.
Don't refrigerate your tomatoes.
How do you feel about that?
You don't refrigerate, because I see that all the time. People, and I see the refrigerated tomato, I'm like, oh, you went to the farmer's market, but then you didn't do it well. Don't refrigerate your tomatoes. They'll be fine. You got to buy them once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
Eat them. They're delicious. Don't refrigerate them. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.